Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Just Believe Radio on the RightStream Network. This is your host, Lisa Tarvis. I want to wish everybody a really happy Easter. Every time I say that, I want to say happy Thanksgiving. I don't know why, but it's not Thanksgiving, it's Easter, which is great because that means spring's right around the corner. So anyway, I hope everybody's having a great Sunday so far, and I appreciate everybody calling in and listening in for the show. On a holiday. Today we're going to talk to Sylvia Schultz, who wrote a book called Fractured Spirits. And this is the first, you know, the RightStream Network, well, my part, Just Believe Radio of the RightStream Network, has only been around for a little while, and just a few weeks. And this is the first paranormal one, I guess, to do. So I'm really excited about that. But Sylvia wrote a book called Fractured Spirits, Hauntings at the Peoria State Hospital, and I really hope I'm pronouncing that right, but I'm pretty sure that's it. So anyway, we're going to talk to her today about the hauntings at the State Hospital, which is really cool. I'm broadcasting from the suburbs of Philadelphia, outside of, it's called Pottstown, Pennsylvania. It's kind of, you know, if you're from someplace big, you probably want to think of it as like close to like Valley Forge, Pennsylvania area. But we have right down the street from where I live, we have a state hospital that's been closed down a few years, and it's kind of interesting the stuff that goes on there. They have a lot of hauntings and things like that. There as well. It's called Pennhurst, and so it's going to be cool to see what all is going on at the Peoria State Hospital. But anyway, just a little bit about Just Believe Radio. Where every week we broadcast at 1 o'clock on Sundays. The show is going to be it's going to cover spiritual subjects, holistic subjects, metaphysical subjects, paranormal subjects. That sort of thing. Anybody interested in being a guest, or I'm booking actually into, well, I think probably July now. We're going to start doing some double broadcasts, doing a couple guests per show and lengthen the show a little bit in a few weeks. But June and July is when I'm booking right now. Anybody who wants to come on the show, just send an email to lisa@lisatarvis.com. Anybody wants to watch any or listen to any of our previous episodes, you can listen at www.lisatarvis.com, which is my website where all my information is. You can follow me on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, whatever there, and you can receive all the radio archives for all the shows I do as a guest and the shows that I do on Just Believe. It's got its own page of different shows that we've had so far. And we will continue to have some really great shows coming up very soon, every week at 1 o'clock. So I want to get to Sylvia because this is going to be a really, like I said, I'm really excited about this show because of the fact that it's our first paranormal one. And I love paranormal anything. I just think paranormal is fun. So we're going to talk to Sylvia a little bit, and I'm going to bring her on now. If you can just hold on for me. Sylvia, are you there?
I most certainly am.
Yay. Thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for spending Easter with me.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and I'm really pleased to be your first paranormal-oriented guest. That's a special thing for me. Thank you.
Yes, thanks. I'm really excited about it. I love paranormal, but when you're doing a show like this, I try to, you know, keep things kind of mixed up a little bit, get some spiritual stuff, some holistic health stuff, you know, some different things like that, but paranormal, that's kind of just where my I guess my big interest lies, and I think a lot of people are interested in paranormal subjects. So
it's just really fascinating. The idea that we go on after death, that there's something left of us afterwards, is just
now,
fascinating.
Now, I am pronouncing it right. It is Peoria, right?
Yes, exactly, exactly.
Thank goodness. I've been saying Peoria all week when I've been talking about
saying it right. Actually, Bartonville, where the state hospital is located, is a little bit south of Peoria. But it was named the Peoria State Hospital because Peoria was the closest big city to it.
All right. Well, I'm assuming you're going to tell us some great ghost stories here today, but let's start
I certainly am.
Good. Let's start off with just your basic question of how you got interested in paranormal investigating, besides the fact that it's just interesting to all of us. But how did you specifically get into it?
Well, Lisa, like you, I've always been fascinated with the paranormal. I've always loved a good ghost story. Ever since I was a little kid, if I was visiting somebody's house, if I was babysitting at somebody's house, and if there was a ghost story book on the shelf, I was nose deep in it. I've always loved ghost stories, and true ghost stories are even better. Made-up ghost stories, okay, but true ghost stories just always fascinated me. That's about it. I didn't grow up in a haunted house. I'm not sensitive. I didn't grow up around hauntings. I've just always loved true ghost stories. And then a few years ago, I was contacted by a publisher. I've been writing horror novels for some time. And a publisher contacted me and said, well, I put out this series of ghost story books, true ghost story books. I would like you to write one on ghosts of the Illinois River. And that was just a dream come true for me. I mean, me writing my own collection of true ghost stories was just out of this world. And
wow.
That's how I got started in paranormal investigation, was by doing research for that book. It's great. I've had so many great experiences just from that one little phone call. It's been amazing. And I was talking with somebody about the Peoria State Hospital. And there have been a couple of history books written on the asylum. And every ghost story book about Central Illinois will mention Bartonville as being a very haunted place, but no one until now has gone around and collected all of the ghost stories that have come out of the asylum. And I was the one privileged enough to be able to do this. I'm
lucky,
very, very
yeah.
grateful for the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now
some great stories.
Yeah, the hospital is abandoned now, right? Was it an asylum like for the mentally ill? Was that what it was?
Well, that was its main focus. When it was started, it was called the Illinois Hospital for the Incurable Insane. Now, what one of the superintendents, Dr. George Zeller, he went to the Peoria, to the Illinois State Assembly. He went to the Senate, and he stood up before the governing body and said, "You need to change the name of this hospital to the Peoria State Hospital. Do not tell my patients they are incurable. I'm here to do just that."
Oh,
he
good.
Was devoted
good.
To his patients. I mean, you were
yeah.
talking about Parkhurst or Pennhurst? Pennhurst?
Right,
earlier?
Yeah, Pennhurst. Yeah,
yeah,
right down the road from me, yeah.
Right, and you think about Pennhurst, you think about Waverly, and you think about all these abandoned asylums, and you say, well, of course they're haunted because the patients were abused. And that couldn't be farther from the truth with the Peoria State Hospital. I started doing research on the history of the place in preparation for learning about the hauntings. And I was so grateful to realize that this was not a place of pain and suffering and abuse. It was a place of love and caring and compassion. It was wonderful. For much of its history, it was the premier center for mental health care in the United States, if not the world.
Yeah, and that probably comes from the lead doctor there, like you were saying, who didn't want, you know, his patients to hear they're incurable. The love that he had for his patients, I'm sure, is what carried over. And I'm sure he made sure that everybody was well taken care of, which is nice. Because you hear asylum and you usually hear that they were abused and you know, that the hauntings are bad, and the hauntings are, you know, sometimes hauntings can just be people who don't want to leave. They liked it there, you know.
Exactly.
So.
That's exactly the case at the Peoria State Hospital. He and his wife, Sophie, were absolutely devoted to their patients. They called their patients their children. And any patient who died and was buried in the cemeteries, they were our sleeping children.
Really?
He was absolutely devoted to the care of his patients. He was very particular about the people he hired. He hired mainly women. He felt that a woman's caring touch was a lot better and more therapeutic for a patient than a gruff male attendant.
I remember reading that the asylum closed in, like, I think the 70s, right? Early
70s? Yes, 1973 when it closed.
When did it open?
1902.
Okay, so in 1902, you figure that, I guess, you know, women were just more likely to be nurses back then, and probably...
Right.
More likely, you know, and also we're always thought of as, not that they're still not, but, you know, they're always the caregivers and the nurturers and things like that. So that makes sense if he would think that way, you know, especially for the time that it was. So anyway, continue on. Tell us more about the asylum itself and,
sure.
and the type of spirits that you encountered there.
Absolutely. When people think of the Peoria State Hospital, I mean, did you see the Ghost Hunters program on the State Hospital?
I did.
It was at January 30th. Yeah, that's when it aired. When they were exploring the hospital, they concentrated on one building, the Bowen Building. And so many people think that's the entire asylum. That's really not the case at all. That was just one building. At its height, the asylum encompassed the entire hilltop. There were 65 buildings of the asylum.
That's a big hospital, yeah.
Yes,
wow.
Yes, it is. 13 of those buildings remain, including the Bowen building. It was its own insular little community. They had their own fire department. They had their own water treatment plant, their own sewage treatment plant. The patients, the clothes the patients wore were made on site by patients. They were allowed to have needles and scissors to cut up the fabric and everything. That was unheard of for the time. They had their own bakery.
You think of an asylum and you think of somebody in a straitjacket or, you know, in a rubber room somewhere. You don't really think about it being... I don't know. I guess if they are doing
a productive place,
maybe,
you don't think of it being
maybe
productive.
Maybe they play, the craziest thing they do is play checkers or something. And we're talking about an actual functioning, basically a community.
Yes, exactly. We are talking about exactly that. The bakery produced 1,000 loaves of bread a day to feed this place.
Wow, unbelievable.
They had three working farms. The patients were encouraged to care for the animals. And you mentioned straitjackets earlier. That was one of the first things that Dr. Zeller did. He banned the use of straitjackets. He banned the use of manacles and handcuffs.
Wow.
He took them all and he put them all in one little room like a museum to point to and say, never again, not here, not at this asylum.
So how did they handle, I mean, I'm assuming, I, whatever kind of community, even if you have everybody completely healthy mentally and every other way, you're going to have somebody act out violently. How did they handle that?
Well, that's why they had the female attendants. That Dr. Zeller found that if you had this guy, this big, you know, 300-pound guy that ran away from the asylum and decided to lose himself in Peoria, he would routinely send out nurses to the horrible parts of Peoria to find these patients and bring them back. And that's usually all it took, is this kind, caring voice and a gentle hand on their shoulder or their elbow to lead them back to the asylum. It was really an amazing place.
that's unreal. Yeah. I mean, I certainly can't say that's the stories we hear from Pennhurst.
Right.
You know,
Yeah, he just said, you know what, this is going to work. This is the way I'm going to run things, and it's going to work, by golly. And by golly, it did.
That's beautiful. That's great. That's a great thing. So what are some of the spirits that you encountered there? What did you find personally when you investigated?
Oh, there are so many.
Okay,
wow.
The best ones, the most exciting ones.
The top 10 list of spirits in the Fury
exactly,
State Hospital. Yeah. Oh, gosh. The hospital was functioning from 1902 to 1973, so it is just up to the rafters with ghosts. But some of the famous spirits that have come out of the Peoria State Hospital. One of them was a patient, and the haunting started even before the hospital closed in 1973. There was a patient at the beginning of the 20th century who came to the Peoria State Hospital. He was brought there because he was at work in Peoria, and he went insane on the job. He had a nervous breakdown on the job, and nobody knew what to do with him. They just took him to the asylum. So all his breakdown was so complete and so total that he had lost the power of speech. And all anyone knew about this guy was that he had worked at a bookbindery in Peoria. So the intake nurses wrote his name down in the ledger as a bookbinder. And that he became known by the nickname of Old Book. So the neat thing about the Peoria State Hospital was that Dr. Zeller made sure that everyone had a job to do. We talked about it being a productive place. People were encouraged to have a job of their own, a reason to get up in the morning and go out and do things. Old Book's job at the asylum was to dig graves. There were two cemeteries in use at that particular time, and he would dig the graves for anyone who passed away at the asylum and who chose to be buried there rather than their bodies claimed by their families. So the first funeral he attended, Old Book was standing by the grave that he had just dug, and they were doing a ceremony and everything, and a tear tracked down his cheek, and he started to sniffle a little bit. And pretty soon he was openly sobbing. And after that, he couldn't handle himself. He just broke down in tears, and he walked away from the grave, and he walked over to this great big elm tree that was in the middle of the cemetery, and he leaned against the trunk of the elm tree and just let loose. He was just bawling his eyes out, just sobbing horribly. And the ceremony ended, and Old Book collected himself and wiped his face off and came back to the grave and filled in the grave.
Wow.
And he did this for every funeral he attended. And he attended every funeral that was held on the asylum grounds. And he just became known for that. If there was a ceremony, Old Book was going to be there, and he would, halfway through the ceremony, he would just lose it and have to go to the cemetery, the graveyard elm, as it was called, and just lean
right
against it and just let himself cry for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
So after a while, he himself died. This is in mid-1920s, I believe. And he was very well known at the asylum. He was a character. Everyone knew who he was. So his funeral was very well attended. We know about this because Dr. Zeller himself wrote about it in his memoirs.
Okay.
And they sang a hymn, and they gave the eulogy. And then there were four guys standing next to the coffin, two on each side, and there were ropes underneath the coffin to lift the coffin up and lower it into the grave. And these four guys picked up the ends of the ropes and heaved on them to lift the coffin up, and the coffin just bounced up into the air as though it were empty. And at that moment, there was a wailing heard coming from the graveyard elm. Everyone heard this horrible crying and moaning coming from the graveyard elm. And they all turned to look, and there was the ghost of Old Book standing by the graveyard elm, wailing and moaning as though his heart were going to break.
Wow.
Yeah. And People fainted dead away. People just collapsed because their knees couldn't hold them anymore. It was just chaos. And Dr. Zeller was at the funeral, and he marched over to the coffin, and he pointed down, and he said, "I want that coffin open right now." And he pried the lid off the coffin, and as soon as the coffin lid opened, the wailing stopped, the ghost disappeared, and they looked in the coffin, and there was old Book in his coffin, undeniably dead.
Oh, my gosh.
And Dr. Zeller wrote in his memoirs, he said, "It was awful, but it was real. I saw it. 100 nurses and 300 spectators saw it."
That's amazing. I mean, it's just, you hear these stories, and, you know, people say, I'm sure you get asked a lot based on the books that you've written, and not just this book, but your other books too, whether or not you believe in ghosts. But I guess if you see this kind of thing, how can you not?
Exactly.
I mean, if you've actually been able to witness something like this, you know?
Yeah, you can say all you want to, "Well, I don't believe in ghosts," but when you have an experience of your own, then it changes everything.
Yeah, I bet it does. I want to take a quick break, real,
sure.
And give you a few minutes to maybe, you know, think about some other stories you might want to tell us, but I've got lots more questions for you too. So
absolutely.
If you can just hang in there with me for a minute, we're going to take
yeah.
a short break, and we'll be right back.
Cool.
Hi, this is Jennifer Coolidge. The American Heart Association says the disco song "Stayin' Alive" is the near-perfect beat for hands-only CPR. If you see a teen or adult collapse from cardiac arrest, you only need 2 steps to help save a life. Call 911 and push hard and fast in the center of the chest to the beat of the song "Stayin' Alive." Disco is back and it's saving lives. To learn more, go to heart.org/hands-only-CPR.
Nationally supported by the WellPoint Foundation.
Hi, this is Daria Ann, author and founder of the RightStream Radio Network. If you're an author, writer, blogger, or just someone who enjoys reading and learning, I hope you'll tune in to our inspiring, insightful, and educational programs. Every Sunday, join author and metaphysician Lisa Tarvez for Just Believe at 1 p.m. Eastern, when she explores a variety of spiritual topics, including alternative healing modalities. A gifted intuitive from a young age, Lisa's book, entitled Just Believe, chronicles her journey from a childhood of seeing and communicating with angels to a career in which she uses her talents to help others emotionally, spiritually, and physically. Each week, she interviews experts in the fields of personal growth, spiritual development, and alternative medicine. Military Mondays with author and military historian John D. Gresham analyzes current events and issues from the perspective of the United States military. Tune in at 1 p.m. Eastern every Monday when John, author of such books as Uncommon Valor and journalist for the Defense Media Network, interviews accomplished guests on important topics like national security and defense and global terrorism. RightStream Tuesdays with Daria Ann airs at 1 p.m. Eastern and welcomes authors in diverse genres, including romance, drama, military history, spirituality, and politics. We also speak social, discussing the benefits and pitfalls of social media platforms and the numerous and plentiful publishing formats now available with various experts in order to help other authors navigate through new technology to reach higher levels of success. During every broadcast, we welcome your calls at 347-945-7246. And of course, the chat room is always open. Can't listen live? No worries. Just go to blogtalkradio.com/rightstream to listen to the archives. And be sure to join us for our weekly Thursday RightStream Twitter chat at 11 a.m. Eastern using the hashtag RightStream on Twitter. rejoice in the flow of creativity with the RightStream Radio Network and the RightStream Twitter chat.
Okay, everybody, we're back. I just want to give the number, in case you have any questions for Sylvia about either her book, Fractured Spirits, or maybe ghost hunting in general, you can reach us at 347-945-7246. Again, that's 347-945-7246. And if you hit number one, when you call in, you will be in the queue on my switchboard, so I'll be able to see you on hold with your questions. But also, you can always ask a question from the chat room, and we do have a question in the chat room that I'll get to in a minute. Also, I wanted to bring Sylvia back on. Welcome back, Sylvia. Thanks for coming back with us.
Absolutely.
Let's get into a little bit of the ghost hunting part. When you do, I mean, how many actual ghost investigations have you gone on that you've been a part of, or can you even count them?
Oh, man, I've been out to the asylum dozens of times. I think being at the asylum, as haunted as it is, has kind of ruined me for other ghost hunting sites. There's always something going on there. There's so much activity that I've just really been spoiled. And because I love the place so much, I've talked to more than one person that has said the asylum just has a hold on people. You go there just a couple of times and you want to keep going back. I don't know if it's the residual energy of Dr. Zeller hanging around and all his devoted staff, or the fact that it is just so very, very haunted and there's so much activity, so many things to experience. I don't know what it is, but it really has a pull on people. And I know I'm not the only one who feels that. I've spoken to a half a dozen people, more than that, that have told me that. They just say, well, there's just something about the place that draws you back.
Right. We've all watched Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventures and all the different, all the different shows that are on. Well, most of us have anyway. If you're listening to this show, most likely you've listened to them.
Ghost Adventure show. A friend of mine calls it Ghost Wrestling.
Yeah, I know, right? It's like some of the shows are crazy, but Ghost Hunters is one of my very favorites, and I love that, they go in trying to prove that it's not haunted before, but they just love if it is,
Yeah.
But they go in with their whole debunking theory, which is really cool. But what I want to ask about is there are so many different, and I own several pieces of ghost hunting equipment that, I've never gone, even with Pennhurst up the road, I've never actually gone and done any real ghost hunting myself that it hasn't been like a client that had me come into their house or something like that. But what kind of equipment do you use? What do you like the most? Do you find EVPs? Or do you use EVP equipment, and do you find that you're able to get something from Peoria State EVP-wise?
Absolutely. Peoria State Hospital is a wealth of EVP material. I myself have captured several really good ones out there. That's my personal favorite piece of equipment to work with is using a recorder, just sitting there quietly, listening to whatever happens to come up. I'm a big fan of the ghost box, but I'm really conflicted about it.
Talk about the ghost box a little bit. For anybody who doesn't know, EVP is electronic voice phenomenon. And basically, you just use a digital recorder, really.
Yeah.
And it's stuff that you then replay and you can hear later. You don't necessarily hear it at the time, but it gets picked up on the recorder. It's fascinating. And, if you just Google EVPs or electronic voice phenomena, you'll find EVPs that'll blow your mind. I mean,
there really is
some amazing stuff, and you can do it yourself. You can do it in your own house if you live in an older house. Even if you don't live in an older house, a lot of people get that all messed up too. I think it doesn't matter that the spirits can be with you, not with your home. So with the land you're on, you don't know what your house is built on. You know, I mean, it's there's all kinds of stuff there. But talk about the ghost box, because I have heard about this, and I did look into it a little bit because it was fascinating, but I didn't delve in just as much as I'd like to. So tell us a little bit about what the ghost box is.
Well, the ghost box is also affectionately known as a shack hack, because what it is an AM radio that is set up to automatically scroll through the AM dial. And it just stops on each station for just a second, and it just scrolls through, and it produces a lot of white noise. And the theory is that the spirits take that white noise and take the words that they're hearing on the stations and form sentences, and they're able to communicate. It's very much like catching EVPs, but you can actually talk with the spirits using the ghost box. And
wasn't there a movie that a guy did this with?
White Noise, yeah. I've never seen it, so I can't really comment on it.
I don't watch a lot either, but I'm more into like the hour long shows that I don't have to sit still for that longer than that. But
I'd rather stick my nose in a book.
Yeah, I know. Me too. I like that too. But I'm like a Netflix person. I want to watch the entire series at one time. I don't want to have to wait for next week. I don't want to wait till next week to watch the rest of it. I'm like, I want to know what happens now. Anyway,
oh, man, you and me both.
it's too hard to wait a week. Anyway,
yeah.
So the ghost box basically, so you're able to have a conversation back and forth. You're able to ask questions, and they actually speak back to you.
Yes, it is amazing. There's a part of me that thinks the entire ghost box thing is a complete boot tread of bullcrap. But, I mean, how in the world can they do this? How in the world can they pick out words and actually respond to you? But I've seen it in action. I've heard it. I've listened to it. I've talked to spirits using the ghost box and have gotten coherent answers. It's just amazing. The bigger part of me thinks that the ghost box is the coolest toy ever.
but what about it makes you think that it could be just like garbage, that it could be like, you know, not real?
You're flipping through and you're trying to. I was very lucky in that the times that I've worked with the ghost box, I was working with people that had much more experience listening to it than I did. So they were able to, as these snippets of sound went by, they were able to pick out the words. And it's a very interesting experience listening to a ghost box, because you hear the sound slipping past, but you can also tell when a spirit comes through, it tends to be a different voice than just what you're hearing flipping past. It's really interesting, and different voices come through. I mean, if you have more than one spirit there, they'll seem to use different voices to respond to your questions. It's really fascinating. I've heard different voices come out at different times. We were in the basement of the Pollock building, and we were told to leave, and one male voice said, "Leave." Then we heard a little bit of static, and another voice said, "He's right." And it was definitely two different voices talking.
I'll tell you what, if the ghost ever says to me, "Get out or leave," I am so out. I'm not waiting around to see what they have for me next. I just suggest, you know, if a ghost asks you to leave, you just leave.
Respect that. We did respect. We wanted to stay, and we said, can we come back later? And they said yes, so we did. So we respected their wishes. When they said leave, and another voice said leave immediately, we said, all right, fine, we'll leave. We'll go to a different part of the building.
But you have no idea why they're saying that. They just may not want to be bothered, or they may just not want the intrusion, or, you know,
exactly.
Who knows what at the time.
Yeah.
And other times it could be, I mean, you know, ghosts like any other spirit, living or dead, are going to have their days where they feel like probably, you know, communicating more than others. And I would assume good and bad moods. But so did anything, when you were doing all your investigating at Peoria State Hospital, did anything at any point ever really freak you out, really scare you?
I wouldn't say I was ever scared over there, but there was one thing that really did freak me out pretty hard. People always ask me that, they know I'm a paranormal investigator, and they always say, well, have you ever seen anything? And I've never seen a shadow person. The halls of the Pollock building, the Pollock Hospital, are just filled with shadow people. I've never seen a one of them. I've never seen a shadow in a cemetery. I just don't see things. However, I was at the Pollock Hospital, and we were in the basement, and it was the same evening we were working with the ghost box so much. And there were tons of people there. I was with Peoria Paranormal, and they had opened the investigation up to people who just wanted to see what it was like. So there were about 50 people in the building, lots and lots of people for an investigation. So I was with a group that went down to the basement, and there was already a group down there. So we said, okay, well, we won't stress the spirits out too much. We'll let this group be down there, and we'll go somewhere else. We ended up going to the women's ward. So we're going up the stairs, the basement stairs, and I've got this thing where I really don't like being the last person out of a room that I know is haunted and is dark. I know, a big bad ghost hunter is scared of the dark.
Well, I don't blame you there.
But I made sure that there was somebody behind me. And I didn't know most of the people there. I knew like two of the volunteers of the building. That's it. All of these other people I had just met that night. So I didn't know anybody by sight. But there was this investigator behind me. She was a girl with long, straight, blonde hair. She was wearing this blue puffy ski jacket. It was April, so people were wearing jackets inside the unheated building. So I go up the stairs. Everybody's going up ahead of me and everything, and I'm going up the stairs. And at the top of the stairs, I stop, and I hold this heavy basement door for the investigator who's behind me. And there's nobody there.
Wow.
I could have sworn. I stopped and I held the door for her. I was convinced there was someone behind me. And there wasn't. And the volunteer that was with us, who was sensitive, said, yeah, she'll just come up to the top of the stairs and she won't come any farther. And I spun around and looked at her and said, what, there really was somebody behind me? And she said, yeah, it's one of the spirits in the basement. She'll just come up to the top of the stairs. That's all.
You know, we have a question in the chat room, and this seems like a good time to bring it up, because you're talking about sensitives. You're talking about people that are able to see things versus people that aren't able to see things. So, you know, whether it's, whether you call them psychics or mediums or, you know, whatever you want to label, if you need to label, however you want to label things. Whatever they are, do you think maybe that, especially back in the time of, you know, the Peoria State Hospital's existence and, and other mental health facilities of that time, that maybe a lot of the question that I'm asking is for Dune and in the chat room, and she's wondering if maybe some of those people that were said to suffer from mental illness, mental health issues, maybe were seeing into the other side. Like, they were sensitive, or they were psychics, and they were able to see things that other people, that, you know, the average person can't see.
And they start describing things, and somebody says, oh, my gosh, you're crazy. You need to be locked up.
Right. Exactly.
No doubt.
Exactly.
I would
imagine that that's something that probably happened a lot. I mean, still today, even with, you know, my ability to talk to angels and spirits and sense things that, that maybe the average person can't sense, I always get really I'm very careful about who I mention it to. I'm certainly not going to tell my doctor about
right.
it because
exactly.
they'll be like, okay, Lise, let's take a little trip here, you know.
And before I know it, I'll be locked up somewhere. I think it's a big pendulum, and it swings back and forth. I mean, you talk about the medieval period, and you have the seers and the people, the saints that say that they can speak with the angels. And that's perfectly acceptable in the medieval period. Everyone's really spiritual anyway. And they
right.
say, hey, that's wonderful. You can talk to angels. That's great. Let's beatify you and give you a place of honor. And then you have the Renaissance and people, we're all scientific now. We're not going to believe in that sort of thing. And I think the pendulum is swinging back towards being more accepting of that now that we've reached an age when we are more enlightened and more accepting of things like that. I think that it's a little more, all these books that have come out about people speaking with angels and going to heaven and coming back and reporting on what they've seen there, I think it's becoming a little more accepted. I think you're not in quite so much danger of the men in the white coats.
Seriously, that's 50 years ago. there was a lot of... I think there was a lot of overlap there. There were a lot of people who, you know, that had gifts. And, you go back to even as far back as the witch trials and things like that, where, you're talking about people that may have been sensitive, and it was not allowed. I mean, it was against the basic religion of the day, and
right.
so it was
maybe it's a little more than just being good at herbal medicine. Maybe you're actually sensing things that are not of this world. Oh boy, yeah, let's burn her at the stake,
Yeah, exactly. and it's like, there's so many different things there. There's so much different areas to touch on there. But
yeah.
I think that, had it been a couple hundred years later, the people that were burned as witches, they would have been, like you were saying, they would have been honored. They would have been, thought to be, have gifts, or even, maybe even a couple hundred years earlier. Who knows? I mean, however, but it worked. But now it has. It has become, and I always say there's an awakening happening within people now, and that people are getting very into a lot more spiritual openness. They're becoming more spiritually open and aware, and not as closed-minded, not as I'm this religion, so I have to follow just this practice, and I can't like overlap anything. I can't say, well, it's okay to do, it's okay if to go see a psychic. Even though that's thought of to be somebody speaking with the devil or something, what I mean, like whatever the story was there. But I think there is a lot of overlap there, and I think it's an interesting topic to think about the very people that were patients there.
Yeah.
may have had some of the most amazing. Intuitive and psychic gifts.
Could be.
And what would be really cool
is if the same soul had been revered in the medieval period and then reviled as a witch in that period, and then we're living today and we're coming back full circle. That would be really cool. Is
if
the
and
same
it would
soul.
Be, and think of the people that, think of the ghosts that are still at Peoria Gate, the ones that have, hung on behind.
Yeah.
Maybe, what if they had lived through a time where it was very accepted and then lived through a time where it was say they lived through a time where it was very accepted, and then all of a sudden they're put into, a facility for the same thing that in a previous life they had been, revered for, they had been loved for, and how that would maybe confuse them, and maybe they wouldn't want to go to the next life. Maybe they wouldn't want to move on because
that
they
could be, what happened here?
Right. If I move on, what's the next life going to be? Are they going to be treating me well, or are they going to even be worse than putting me in an asylum? Like, are we going to go back to being burned at the stake? You have to think about, why do these spirits stay earthbound? Why do spirits choose to stay earthbound? And I think with Peoria State, we're just assuming that it's because they felt loved there. They felt protected and loved and didn't want to leave. Is that your opinion?
Yes, absolutely. The grounds of the Peoria State Hospital are a perfect storm of things that will make a place haunted. There's a lot of limestone in the area, and there's a theory in paranormal circles that limestone being made from the calcified skeletons of little bitty sea creatures, being made from a matrix of something that was once alive, that's a very good attractant for psychic energy. You tend to get a lot more, when you take pictures, photographs around places that have a lot of limestone, you tend to get a lot of light anomalies.
Huh.
And Native American spirituality also makes use of limestone as an attractant for psychic energy. There's a lot of running water around that particular area of the state. The Illinois River, the longest river in the state, runs just a few hundred yards away from the hilltop. There was a Native American presence there. The very first settlers in the area were French, and they set up a fort, Fort Crèvecoeur, which is within minutes of what is now Bartonville. And the records, the officers of the fort, in their records describe a Native American presence in what is now Bartonville. We don't know if it was a burial ground or a village, but there was some sort of Native American presence there. People have captured the sound of Native American drumming, and they've also captured EVPs of what sounds like Native American speech in Bartonville. And then
that's interesting.
Yeah. And then you've also got the fact that in 1973, when the state closed the asylum, they basically locked the doors and walked away. Everything was left just in place. There was such a stigma attached to the place being a mental asylum that nobody wanted to go near it. Nobody wanted to use those buildings for anything else. People broke in. That's for
sure.
People broke in and did a lot of damage. But they went souvenir hunting all over the place. But the cottages where the patients lived were just left as they were. All the patients' stuff was still there. When the asylum closed in 1973, there were 18 patients left. And they're mostly geriatric. They were farmed out to other asylums in the state. There was a couple of them went to Galesburg Mental Health Center, and a couple of them went to nursing homes in Pekin and in Springfield. And Springfield is about an hour and a half's drive from Bartonville. One of the patients that was put into a nursing home in Springfield walked back to Bartonville, found her cottage, and she was found sitting on the steps of her cottage waiting to be let in, not understanding that it was locked and closed and shuttered and nobody was going to let her in.
Was there a reason that they closed down? Was there a specific, was there some reason behind their shutting down?
There was a very good reason, yes. During the mid-1960s, they did a lot of renovations at the asylum. There was a big renovation that happened at the administration building, at the Bowen building. They completely remodeled the inside. And when they did, the asylum asked for funds from the state. So the state took a good look at the asylum, and they realized that the Peoria State Hospital had the highest rate of reintegration into society of any asylum anywhere. They really did a good job. Unfortunately, it was also the most expensive. So what the state decided to do was cut funding. It was basically a death by a thousand cuts for the asylum. It was really the beginning of the end in the mid-1960s. Funding got cut back so severely in the next few years that within a couple of years, you had 400 nurses trying to care for 4,000 patients.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's when abuses started to creep in. The nurses could not adequately care for the patients. Researchers have found documents from the 1920s and 1930s and 40s even, which is a checklist for the nurses to go through when patients had visitors. Make sure the patient is dressed in nice clothes. Help her comb her hair. Help her put some makeup on. And they gave each patient this personal care. But when the funding got cut so radically, they were no longer able to provide that personal care. And patients were wandering around half-dressed. Mm. They did not get adequate care. And the state said, see, everybody hates you. We're going to shut you down.
What a sad thing from the doctor that was running the place, caring so much about the patient's care and, you know, how they were cared for, how well they were cared for, and how they were respected and by him, to having the exact opposite of what he wanted happening at his hospital.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah,
it is heartbreaking. Dr. Zeller died in 1938, and by 1940, they were starting to do, less than 20 lobotomies. They did actually perform lobotomies.
I was going to ask about lobotomies, electric shock therapy. Did they do those things there?
Well, you just said that they did
lobotomies.
The sad thing about this is that they did, the attendants at the hospital did these things that we consider so horrible, but they did them with the best of intentions.
Yeah, I think that they were. They thought that they were helping. That was a very common thing, that they thought that it was helping. I don't think anybody did it for.
These are people that lived in the community.
Right.
This was their home. They weren't going to mistreat these patients because these were neighbors of theirs sometimes. These were people that they knew. I mean, they're not going to abuse their patients. But I was talking with a historian at the Pollock Hospital at the TB ward, and she said, yes, there were lobotomies performed. Even after Dr. Zeller's death, the administration of the hospital was still committed to keeping on his rules. They still wanted to have women in charge of the patients because they still felt it was a good idea. So if you had this 6.5-foot-tall, 300-pound mentally challenged rapist that you had to control, and you were this little bitty nurse, you had to control him, and you performed a lobotomy on this guy, you turned him into a third grader. And you turned him into somebody who was docile enough that you could take his hand and lead him around and say, here, this is your job for today, please do it. And he would do it. And you would take him by the hand, you would lead him off to the dining hall to have his supper. He wouldn't fight you. He wouldn't try to hurt you. So they really did it with the best of intents. They also did electric shock therapy, but and this is also going to sound barbaric, and I apologize for this, but they put people into insulin comas to perform the shock therapy on them. They knew the shock therapy was going to work, so they incapacitated the patient so that the shock therapy wouldn't cause them to convulse and break bones the way it would if they were conscious when the shock therapy happened.
Wow.
Yeah,
they
did all these things that we consider barbaric, but they did them in therapeutic ways. They did them with the best of intentions. They did it to be helping the patient, and they did it the best way they knew how.
And you know what? You get down to anything with regard to, you know, spirituality and holistic medicine and, you know, I mean, even things like magic, practicing, you know, Wicca and things like that. And
yeah.
And it all comes down to intention, and the intention being the power behind anything. So if the intention was good, I mean, that, you know, that I'm sure that the patients knew that. They didn't feel that they were being punished or anything, but you know, it just shows, it just makes you wonder, you know, the it just shows you the time period and what things were like time period wise, because it was that he didn't want straitjackets used and handcuffs used and things like that, but it was okay to, you know, because of the fact that they might have a violent rapist on their hands, but at the same time performing a lobotomy was thought to be okay. So, you know, and now to think the reverse is so true, you know what I mean? Now you can't perform a lobotomy, but you could certainly use handcuffs or a straitjacket. So, you know, I guess it just goes with the period of time that we're living in and how attitudes change.
Yeah.
Yeah, how attitudes change and how, you know, people just feel differently about different things at different times. And, you know, it just makes you wonder what things are going to be like 50 years from now or 100 years from now, you know. Who knows? All right. Well, I want to talk more specifically about the book, but let's take a real short break here, and and then I want to try and get people to understand a little bit more specifically about ask you some questions specifically about the book. So everybody hold on with me for a minute. You're listening to Just Believe Radio. If you have any questions, you can reach us at 347-945-7246, and we'll be right back.
Imagine a world where bullying isn't considered a normal part of childhood.
A world where I'm not afraid to go to school.
To speak out.
To be myself.
A world where I'm not afraid to be caught alone.
Come on, punk. We have the power to stop the bullying.
Speak out.
Speak up.
Educate.
Find out what to look for and how you can make a difference at bullying.org.
Bullying is not kids being kids.
It's not about good homes or bad homes.
It's not a normal part of growing up.
I shouldn't be afraid to get on the school bus.
To turn on my computer.
Message. Or walk to my locker.
Did you know that a bully will stop his or her behavior in 10 seconds when their peers speak up?
Use your voice.
Hey, leave him alone.
We have the power to stop bullying.
Find out more at bullying.org.
Bullying.org.
Where you're not alone.
Where you're not alone.
Where you're not alone.
Hi, this is Lisa Tarvis. I'm a metaphysician, board-certified holistic health practitioner, energy healer, intuitive, and the author of the book, Just Believe. I'm also a host on the RightStream Network. My radio show is called Just Believe and airs every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Please stop by my website at www.lisatarvis.com. That's LISATARVES. For details on all the services I offer, information on my book, and my radio show. There are many amazing guests and fascinating topics scheduled for the show in the upcoming months. I look forward to connecting with you soon.
All right, welcome back, everybody. This is Lisa Tarvis with Just Believe Radio on the RightStream Network. I am talking today with Sylvia Schultz. She is the author of a book called Fractured Spirit, Hauntings at the Peoria State Hospital. We've been having a fascinating conversation with her about Peoria State Hospital, about paranormal investigating in general. And now I want to try and let's sell some books here, Sylvia. So,
sounds great.
welcome back. And
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you was the paranormal market, obviously, you know this, has been completely overwhelmed with this type of book. The TV shows, the everybody's fascinated in ghosts. I mean, it's just a thing. And for good reason. I mean, it's a fascinating topic. It's a fascinating subject. I think there's a level of comfort to it that you know that I'm noticing in my practice is people that are that kind of fear death. And I think it almost gives them a little bit of comfort to know that
Absolutely.
There's something else after this life.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're offered comfort through that. And, I think that that's probably some of the reason people are just looking for answers now. They're looking for validation that there's something more. And that's probably what's caused this to become such a overwhelmed market. But what makes Fractured Spirit different than the other books that are out there on the market that are similar in a paranormal content way?
Well, the neat thing about Fractured Spirits is that it is interactive. When you're reading the book, you'll see these little ghosty icons in the margins every once in a while. I had somebody tell me that they looked like the monsters in the Pac-Man thing, but they're really little cartoon ghosts. Whenever you see that, that's your signal that there's something going on the Internet. On Facebook, I have set up a Fractured Spirits fan page, and I have posted a lot of photographs and videos and sound files. Facebook is kind of wonky about letting you post sound files, so I had to make a video. So everything is under videos, whether it's the actual video or just a sound file of an EVP. So when you're reading the book and you see one of those little cartoon ghosties, go ahead and go to the Fractured Spirits fan page, and you can click and listen to whatever EVP I'm talking about in the book, or you can look at the video that I'm talking about in the book. So that really sets it apart from a lot of the books that are out there right now.
I'll say that's really different. That's really cool to be able to be at the point that you're at in the book
and
then find out something that's going on currently on that same topic. So that's pretty that's pretty interesting. So that's definitely an interesting thing. So I would imagine that you would encourage everybody to visit the Facebook fan page, which is facebook.com/fractured spirits.
Yes.
And they can there like the page and start listening to some of this really interesting EVP work and other things. And the book is available. Where is the book available?
It's available through Amazon.
Okay.
You can order it through Amazon, or you can also go to the Dark Continents website, the publisher's website, darkcontinents.com. But Amazon's really the easiest way to get it.
Yeah, that's what I was telling everybody. Just go to Amazon. Somebody can buy on Amazon.
Everybody
has an Amazon.
And it is available as an ebook in every platform you can imagine.
Okay, so you can download it for your Kindle or your computer or your Nook or whatever you happen to have. That's good. That's great.
Yes.
What are you wanting people to learn about? What do you want people to know when they're reading Fractured Spirits? What do you want them to take away from the book?
Well, my first goal when I started out researching for this book was to tell a bunch of really fun ghost stories. So that's the first thing I want people to know, is that there are bunches and bunches of really fun stories in that book. I talked to people who just happened to be walking past the buildings and looked up and saw somebody looking out at them. I talked to people who were actually investigating the building. I talked to people who had just broken in just for exploring purposes. I talked to so many people that shared so many wonderful stories with me. And it's really great to be able to look through and see all these different people's experiences. The other thing I really want people to know is what we've been talking about for the past hour or so, is that this asylum is haunted, yes, but it's not because the patients were abused. this is a place, this for most of its history, it was a place of safety, a place of compassion, a place of caring. And I really want people to know that, that most of these patients were not living in terror. I really want people to know that.
And if they were living, a lot of, I think a lot of times if it's, you know, if they were living in terror, that it might have been because of their state of mind, their mental illness, certainly not because of the way that they were cared for.
Absolutely.
You know, you can't control, you know, if a mental illness is causing someone to basically be living inside their own head, and their own head can be a very scary place to be sometimes. The people were at Peoria State, they were, the people that worked there were trying to soothe them, make things better for them. So if they did leave this earth and are, you know, would be still at Peoria State as a, you know, as a entity, they certainly aren't there out of any kind of anger towards the hospital or the people that worked at the hospital. It's just maybe their confusion or their, you know, it being the last place they were, or just, you know, a time where they need to just transition and heal and before they can move on. So that's important. Can people still go there? Can people still go to Peoria State, or is it completely closed down now?
Yes, people can still explore there, absolutely. Most of these 13 buildings that are left are have been repurposed into other things. One of the gymnasium, the former gymnasium, is now a country dance bar called Stone Country. They've been repurposed into office buildings. One of the cottages is now a dentist's office. But there are two buildings that are still in pretty much their original condition. Those two buildings are the Bowen Building, the former administration building, and Nurses College. That's the one that the ghost hunters went to. And just a block away from that is the Pollock Hospital, which was the TB ward. And the Bowen Building has suffered quite a lot over the years due to weather damage, vandals breaking in. Really, it's unfortunate that that building has suffered so much. But the Pollock Hospital is owned by the high school, the local high school's football league. And the people that work there have tried to keep the TB ward as close to its original state as possible. And that is for the purpose of investigators coming in and doing research in the place. The linoleum on the floors, the paint on the walls, they're still pretty much in their original condition. Dr. Zeller was a big believer in color therapy. And there's one of the doors in one of the rooms off of the hallway that is still painted this very pleasing shade of orchid lavender. He felt that it would calm unruly patients down. So that's
well,
you
as
can
a meta,
really
as
learn
a,
lot.
As a metaphysician and holistic health practitioner, I can tell you that color does make a big difference. It definitely does. I'm always telling everybody that's like, I'm so depressed. I'm like, stop wearing black and gray all the time. Throw some freaking yellow on or something.
Exactly.
Put a color on that's not, because everybody, when your mood's down, you're automatically going for the dark color clothes.
Yeah.
And I'm like trying to find the brightest pink I have in my closet, you know, like going against it the other way. Do any of the people that are in that have, you were saying that some of the buildings were converted into office buildings or the other things were built, you know, around the hospital. Are any of those people reporting any kind of paranormal activity?
Absolutely, yes. People have reported paranormal activity at this bar that I mentioned, at the office buildings. The dentist's office does not encourage talk of paranormal activity, so I wasn't able to find anyone to tell me any stories that happened there. But I talked to friends of mine and acquaintances that told me stories that happened at the office building. I talked to a couple of the bartenders at the country dance bar. They'd be in the building late at night, and they'd the way the dance bar is set up is there's the gymnasium floor is where the dancing happens, and then there's the bar along one side, and there's kind of a loft above the bar you can get to via a set of stairs, and there are tables and chairs up there that people can sit up in the loft and watch the dancing down below on the floor. And after the bar closes some nights and the bartenders are still there cleaning up and just generally visiting and having a good time, they'll hear things moving around up in the loft. They'll hear chairs sliding out. They'll hear tables being moved around. And they'll go up and nobody's up there. And they'll put the tables back where they're supposed to be, and they'll go back down, and they'll start talking again, and they'll start hearing tables being shoved around up there again. Right. And they're just like, you know what? It's haunted. We'll live with it.
I'm gonna have to make a trip out there. I happen to love country music and love a nice country music bar, and I love a good ghost hunting. So it sounds right up my alley.
If you do, totally look me up. I'll be your native guide.
I will. Absolutely will. One of the perks of being married to an airline pilot is I can go anywhere I want and it doesn't cost me anything. So
sweet.
You know, yes, I know. I don't ever go anywhere either. I don't know why. I'm a homebody.
I should.
Because I would love that. That would be, I mean, you know, I down the street from me is a hospital that I should be doing, you know, at it, doing investigations. I've never even gone on Halloween. You know, like the lines are ridiculously long. I mean, they have this whole Halloween set up now for, you know, for Pennhurst, and you know, and it costs a fortune to get in, and then they got people grabbing you and all that. I'm like, no. I want a real haunting. I want to see real ghosts. I want to be able to do, you know, EVPs. I want to be able to take my K2 meter in there, and you know, and be picking stuff up that way. And now, thanks to you, I think I want a ghost box. So,
Lisa, come with me. Come visit me, and come with me to the Pollock Hospital. The neat thing about the Pollock Hospital is that every sense is involved, and this is true for the entire asylum, but especially at the Pollock Building. Every sense is involved. People have been touched. People have had, well, in the Bowen Building, people have had chunks of plaster thrown at them on the third floor. People have seen full-body apparitions. People have seen shadow people. And it's every sense is involved. At the Pollock Hospital, which I said was the TB ward, One of the symptoms of tuberculosis is the patients have lesions on their lungs, and the coughing ruptures those lesions, and you cough up blood. People have tasted blood in their mouths at the Pollock Hospital, particularly on the way coming up those basement stairs, coming up from the morgue in the basement to the upper to the first floor. People have tasted blood in their mouths, and sometimes the taste is so strong that people have to go outside and be sick in the grass outside the building.
That is so, you know, I seem to, to me, that is just like an ultimate good time. I know that sounds completely crazy, but that sounds like so much, I mean, that is just like, that's what I want to do. I always tell my husband, I want to go, I want to find one of these places where we can go spend the night in a haunted house or a haunted evening. No way. He's like, no way. You're on your own.
You and I will spend the night at the Pollock Building. And you're being a practitioner of holistic health, you'll get a kick out of this one, too. And see if you can, I haven't talked with anybody else who's really into herbal medicine like I am, but see if you can figure out where I'm going with this. One of the investigators I talked to was sitting in the men's ward of the TV ward, and she and her group were sitting there doing EVP work, and they started smelling something that she described. She said it smelled like Christmas. There's a little bit of cinnamon, but it was a whole lot of pine smell. Can you see where I'm going with this?
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So,
white pine.
Really?
Yeah. White pine is one of the best chest decongestants there is in herbal medicine.
That, and eucalyptus is known to be really good, and white pine, and there are several things that are
that are, I'm sitting here taking deep breaths just thinking about it, because it does. It's very clearing. It's a very clearing and the kind of an energizing thing too, which is interesting.
Yeah. So I have no doubt that what those investigators were smelling was some sort of chest liniment or cough syrup.
Yeah.
From
that's what they would have used back then. So that's kind of that's fascinating. It really is, and I think it would be, you know, so basically, like, investigators can go into certain buildings. I would assume you have to have some kind of permission. You can't go wandering there and knock on the door.
They're locked up. I mean, you'd have to contact a volunteer to let you into the building and possibly guide you around. But, you can still get into those two buildings, absolutely.
That's really fascinating. So there are do they have, like, open tour hours and things like that?
Yes, they do. There are tours available for both of those buildings and for the four cemeteries as well. And the cemetery where old Book is buried is just steps away from the front door of the Pollock Hospital.
So anybody that died while they were in the hospital is for the most part buried there, or
not necessarily?
The family had the option.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The family could claim the body, or if they had no family, they were just buried there on the grounds. There's one lady buried there in Cemetery 3. I think it's 3. Three or four, her name was Emily Belcher, and she was a member of a European royal family. And when she started having mental issues, her family searched the entire planet for the best mental health care for her, and they found it in Bartonville, Illinois. So they had her committed to the Peoria State Hospital, and every month when Emily Belcher was there, she got a care package from her family in Europe, which included a pound of silver for her upkeep.
Oh, my goodness.
And when she was in her final illness, she wrote to her family and said, you know I should be buried in ancestral ground and everything, but this is my family now. I really want to be buried here when I pass on. And her wishes were respected, and she's buried there out of Bartonville.
Did you spend time investigating in the cemeteries?
I did, yes. And
did you find there was a lot of activity there, or not as much?
There's a lot of activity in all four of the cemeteries, and this activity has been going on since before the asylum closed. I spoke with a guy who was an activities director there while the asylum was open, and he was in charge of the adolescent activities. He used to take the adolescent boys out for midnight nature hikes and stargazing. And while they were walking through cemeteries 3 and 4, a couple of the boys saw a shadow person kind of melt into the trees ahead of them. So,
that's
activity has been going on for years and years, since long before the asylum closed.
Yeah, I've never been somebody who wanted to hang out at cemeteries personally.
I never was either. Cemeteries always really creeped me out until I started doing research at the asylum. And now I can walk through a cemetery, especially those four, with no problem at all. I'll wander there through there by myself in the dead of night. I still won't go into the buildings by myself.
if I'm with
somebody, I can go down to the basement in the Pollock building in the morgue and sit there, lights out. As long as there are people with me, I just won't do it by myself. Not just yet.
Yeah, I just always thought, like, if I were a spirit, I wouldn't hang out where my body was buried. I'd be hanging out where I had some emotional connection. But I guess there are situations where, when you're confused, when you don't, you know, maybe when you first pass or you don't realize that you've passed away, and maybe there is some kind of connection still to the physical body, but I don't know. I think I'm going to get too deep here if we start on that. So,
How much time do we have left?
Well, we have. We have time for another story. If you've got a good story.
Okay, I've got a wonderful story.
Great.
Okay, and this is going to lead up to a cemetery experience. So I'll throw that in at the very end. One of the one of the great tragedies in mental health care in Illinois and one of the great success stories of the Peoria State Hospital was the case of a woman named Rhoda Derry. Rhoda was born in 1840 in Adams County, Illinois, down south of here by Quincy. And by all accounts, she was very, very beautiful when she was younger. She was the daughter of a farm family, and she fell in love with the son of a neighboring farm family. We don't know how far their relationship progressed, but we do know that the boy asked her to marry him, and she said yes. Now, the boy's mother was very opposed to this relationship and this marriage, and she went to Rhoda, and she said, "If you don't release my son from this engagement, I'll curse you." And a few weeks after that, Rhoda started displaying all of the symptoms of someone who was being possessed. She took this curse story to heart, and she deteriorated very, very rapidly. Her mania was so complete that she clawed her own eyes out.
Oh, my God.
She went downhill very, very rapidly. She used the heels of her hands to beat out her front teeth. She was very hard to control. Her family kept her at home and cared for her at home as long as they could, but they finally had to commit her to the Adams County Almshouse. She was confined to something called a Utica crib for the first several years that she was at the almshouse. And that's exactly what it sounds like. It's a crib, an adult-sized crib, just like a baby crib, but with bars on top, too. And it's lined with straw. And there's a tray underneath it, just like in a rabbit cage. And that's the same reason that you have a tray under a rabbit cage. You pull the tray out to get rid of the waste that falls down. You empty the tray, you put the tray back. And she was confined to this Utica crib for so long that her limbs atrophied. When she was allowed out, she was no longer able to walk because her limbs had drawn up into a fetal position. She was non-ambulatory. And the really sad part of it was that this woman, the boy's mother, came to visit her and said, "Look, I didn't mean it. There is no curse. You're fine." But she was so far gone, Rhoda was so far gone in her mania that she didn't believe her. She just continued to deteriorate. So she spent over 40 years confined to first the Utica crib and then a box bed, which, again, was not long enough to stretch out in. She was just curled up in a fetal position for most of that time. Dr. Zeller would go around to the almshouses in Illinois, and he would rescue the most pathetic, horrible cases and bring them to the Peoria State Hospital. He visited the Adams County Almshouse, and he found Rhoda, and he brought her to the Peoria State Hospital. She arrived in a laundry basket. The attendants grabbed two sides of this great big, I'm talking an industrial size laundry basket to put, you know, hundreds of dozens of beds worth of sheets in. And it was a big thing. And these two attendants grabbed the basket and started carrying it, and all of a sudden Rhoda popped up from the clothes and started jabbering at people. And people were absolutely stunned that she was in this basket. And that night, she was admitted to the Peoria State Hospital. And that night, for the first time in 43 years, she slept in a bed with clean white sheets.
Wow.
Yeah. And the nurses absolutely doted on her. She was no longer able to see, but they made sure that she could experience the hilltop in any way that was still left to her. They brought her to dances so she could hear the music. They let her sit out in the garden so she could feel the sun on her face and smell the flowers in the gardens. She was very fond of Dr. Zeller. She knew whenever he was in the room. I don't know if she recognized his voice or his cologne or whatever, but she'd always get very, very animated when Dr. Zeller came into the room. She knew who had saved her from that existence.
Wow.
Yeah. She was very fond of chewing tobacco. She she would, she was no longer able to walk, of course, but she could kind of crab along the floor on her knuckles, and she would crab up to you and kind of tug on your pants leg, and that was her way of asking for some chewing tobacco. And because she loved the entire hilltop so much, she can be felt and experienced anywhere on the hilltop. And if you're investigating on the hilltop and you smell chewing tobacco and feel a tugging on your pants leg, that's Rhoda.
That's so amazing.
And I talked to somebody just about a month ago who was doing investigations in Cemetery 1, where Rhoda is buried, and he was recording, and he said, "Oh, darn it, Rhoda, I am so sorry. I was going to bring some chewing tobacco for you, and I forgot. I apologize." And he caught an EVP that said, "That's okay. I can't chew anymore."
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That is so amazing.
We were talking about EVPs earlier, and I said
that
the asylum is just a wealth for EVPs. The Pollock Hospital, there were a lot of children patients there because TB would just race through a family like wildfire. I had talked to somebody who, she and her husband and her mother were investigating at the Pollock Hospital. They were taking a tour, just walking around, and the husband was not sensitive. He was running the recorder, but the woman I talked to and her mother were both sensitive, and they kept saying, "Oh my gosh, there are so many children here. We are surrounded by children." And the husband, of course, knew nothing about this, and he was just wandering around doing his recording and everything, and suddenly he ran over to his wife and he said, you got to listen to this. Listen to this recording. So he played it back for her. He had been wandering around, and he heard something next to him, and he said aloud, "Did I just hear somebody tapping on the window next to me?" And moments later, he heard a child's voice saying, "Yep, you sure did."
Oh my goodness! I love EVPs. There's nothing more. There's nothing better than a good EVP, and especially
I agree completely. They're my favorite.
They are. They're so fascinating because you sit there and you're not hearing it. You know, at the time, most of the time, sometimes you are, but for the most part, you don't hear it. But when you play it back and you just ask the question, and poof, all of a sudden somebody's responding.
Communicating. I love it.
Oh my gosh! I mean, if that doesn't make you understand how real the afterlife is, I don't know what will.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, tell everybody how they can get your book, Fractured Spirits, and anything else you want them to know about how to get a hold of you or, you know, any of that stuff.
Oh, okay. My book is Fractured Spirits, Hauntings at the Peoria State Hospital. And it is available on Amazon. That's the very best place to get it. I also have a fan page on Facebook, also called Fractured Spirits. And I encourage you to visit the fan page and look at all the wonderful photographs I have and listen to the EVPs and watch the videos. And you can also contact me through the fan page, and I'd be delighted if you did. I am prepared to talk ghosts at any time of the day or night. I love chatting about the paranormal, and I look forward to hearing from you. I look forward to hearing how you enjoyed the book.
Well, that's great. I'm really excited. I think it sounds like sounds like a fascinating place, and I am so putting it on my list of things to do when I finally start doing something outside of my house. It's going to be one of the top ones, I promise. So you'll definitely be hearing from me about doing a little tour of that place. That would be very,
fantastic.
Very cool.
Fantastic.
Yeah, everybody, visit Sylvia's webpage, which is at darkcontinents.com. And you can also visit her on Facebook and get some of those cool EVPs and things we were talking about. www.facebook.com/fracturedspirits. So everybody, definitely do that. And Sylvia, I really appreciate you being on the show. It was a lot of fun.
Lisa, thank you so much for inviting me. This was an absolute blast.
Yeah, so happy to finally get a paranormal one in there. So that's great. I really appreciate you being here. And
I will be in touch with you soon.
Excellent.
All right. Thanks, Sylvia.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, everybody. Next week, we're going to have on the show a lady by the name of Kellyanne. And Kellyanne is the author of a book that's going to be coming out. I don't think it's out quite yet, but it's called Single No More. And Single No More. And it's basically, it was a book created for those that are tired of feeling lonely and alone and are ready to attract the one for them. So it's a relationship show next week, so that should be fun. That'll be next Sunday at 1 o'clock. And anybody who needs to get a hold of me, wants to get a hold of me, find out what I do, find out about my book, anything like that, you can go to my website, www.lisatarvis.com. And all my links to everything are there. And again, if you, and all the links to all the previous shows and all the shows I've been a guest on and things like that, you'll find all of those things there, talking about what I do and, when it comes to holistic health, metaphysics, and also things regarding spirituality in general, I guess. And also, I do still want to, anybody that has any questions that they want read on the air, whether it's a psychic question, paranormal question, whatever it might be, please feel free to send me an email at lisa@lisatarvis.com. Again, that's lisa@lisatarvis.com. And I will happily read it on the air. And get back to you then. I appreciate everybody listening in. Again, happy Easter to everyone. And we will see you again or talk to you again, if not before, next Sunday at 1 o'clock with Kellyanne and our relationship show. So we'll see you then. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Bye-bye.